Welcome to the True Blue LA podcast. I'm Jacob Birch. The Dodgers are 48-24, and after going 3-3 last week, they're in first place of the National League West by 10.5 games. With me, as always, is Eric Steven. Eric, how are you doing?
Very good. It sounded like you were going to say first place, and I wasn't going to argue with you.
I was hoping no one would point that out. I almost just redid the intro, but I was like, no, you know what? I used to have a really bad lisp as a kid, so I committed to it. First, they're in first place. How about that? They're firsty for a World Series.
I like it.
This week, we'll be going over the Dodgers draft, talking about Corey Seager's hamstring, and somewhere we'll sneak a Cody Bellinger update.
Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th. Hosted by Kevin Hart, the seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady, live only on Netflix.
You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
Let's do it later.
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy. Fall Guy.
Fall Guy. That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
All of this after this ad break. So yeah, that was our first ad break. You excited, Eric?
You know what? It feels right. I wholeheartedly endorse product.
I'm curious to see what we actually just played. Not entirely up to us. It's gonna be
some controversial thing.
It's up to the good people at SB Nation who have taken us under their umbrella. I'm sure they've picked a wonderful product. We're excited because that money is going to go to paying an editor. I am not a professional editor. I've been doing this for, you know how long I've been doing this podcast now, Eric? It's way longer than I thought. We were losing to the Cardinals.
So 14 or 13? It was 14, right?
It might have been 13, but for a while now.
We're at least 4 years, almost possibly five.
Yeah. And so it's been a while. And so I am no longer in charge of the editing. Hopefully the podcast starts sounding way better now that we've got some ad breaks. And unlike when we had ads before, it should we have way more control whenever they play, because that was kind of obnoxious before. So we hope you're all excited for the higher quality podcast, and we'll move on from there. So when I get a butt out, Eric, I'm going to let you introduce our guest to talk about prospects in the draft.
Yeah. Just real quick before I do that, first of all, it's been a while, but also, what if our first ad was Farmer John? Like, after all these years of talking about
it. Oh, my gosh.
That would have been great.
Oh, my gosh.
But anyway, so a little bit of a break from a format because we have a guest this week, and it's a great guest. The MLB draft was 2 weeks ago, and just to discuss the Dodgers draft, we have David Hood on, who's written about prospects for a few years now, several years, actually, and a few years at True Blue LA. David, how are you doing this evening?
Doing well. Thanks for having me, guys.
Sure. I'm not really doing day-to-day site managing anymore. So I was telling you before we started, my investment in the draft, which is my concentration is usually in the majors anyway. And so the draft was sort of a necessary evil for a while. But now, since I've sort of taken a step back, I am more ignorant about this draft post-draft than I have been in probably a decade. So you're an invaluable resource for us right now. But just, I guess, to get things started, the Dodgers had the draft. They had 41 picks because they had the extra first rounder from last year. What were your initial thoughts? Any broad takeaways that you saw from the draft?
Yeah, I think they did pretty well. I kind of mentioned some of my articles leading up to the draft that I didn't feel like this was the deepest class. It's going to have some obvious stars. I mean, the guys in the top 15 picks, there's about 11, 12 of those that are really, really good players that would have gone in that location in most years. But after that, I really don't think the talent necessarily measured up to some of the more recent years. So having said that, the Dodgers did get pretty good value throughout the first 2 days. There was five players total that they selected on my top 200, and all within, well, five, I should say five that are more likely to sign if you don't count some of the late picks that are kids that are almost certainly going to college. So they were able to get a lot of players right at or about ahead of where I had them ranked. So that's always, from my side, looks good on the Dodgers' end. And really targeted especially college power and college strikeout performance. So two areas that have done them pretty well here in recent years, going back to that well, is kind of their – it's kind of Gasparino's MO at this point in the draft.
Yeah, and like just looking back a few years, Matt Beatty, speaking of college power, he's batting third for the Dodgers tonight. So, like, you never know with some of these guys. Like, sometimes they'll hit and then they'll just make their way through the minors fairly quickly and be an actual major league asset. So who knows, yeah, right?
And I believe it was Gasparino made the point that, you know, you look in the majors today and you know, the college profile plays. Didn't always used to be the case, but you know, a lot of stars come are still coming from the college ranks, and like you said, there is, you know, there's still room for improvement with these college guys, and maybe we won't talk about that so much with the first two guys taken, but some of the guys down the road, there's definitely probably some place for some growth, and maybe they can turn some of these guys into real quality major leaguers.
I know I don't mean this to like call you out or anything, because it's more impressive than anything else. But I know in previous years, just the insane effort you do to put together your like top 200 or however big it goes in some years, your list of draft prospects, and then you actually mock the first 10 rounds, or at least the Dodgers picks in those rounds. And like in previous years, you've actually like nailed a couple picks, maybe not the exact round, but the fact that the Dodgers took them, and it's more, the article is more focused on like what their profile might be and who might they be targeting, that kind of thing. So, but like I noticed this year, like I didn't see anyone, maybe I skimmed it, but no one that you picked or mocked to them actually got picked by them, but it kind of still fit the general profile of their draft, didn't it?
Yeah, I think it did. And that, with that project, it's, I use on the board are fairly good educated guess. You look at guys like that they ended up taking, like Ryan Pepiot, the Butler right-hander in the third round, Aaron Aschenbein from Eastern Kentucky in the sixth round, and then even down like the 13th, 14th round, Cantleberry and Mellon. Not all those names were on my top 200, but definitely guys that I kind of looked at and knew they fit sort of the Dodger mold. They're not really straying too far from what they've done the last 2-3 years in terms of what they're targeting from the college level. So you can narrow down that pool of players on where to target for that exercise. But I think at this point now, with Gasparino and has been here as long as the Friedman regime, we have a pretty good idea of what they target and where they're going to go in the draft.
Yeah. I did a summer internship 1 year in college at Cantleberry and Mellon. It was really fun. So they've signed, as of right now, they signed their first rounder, Cody Hosey. They haven't yet signed Michael Bush, who was the other first rounder, the JT Ginn piece. Initial thoughts on those guys, both college hitters? What do you think of those two picks?
Sure. Well, starting with Hosey, he's a guy that I looked at a lot. I honestly thought was probably going to go ahead of the Dodgers. college bats tend to rise come draft day because it seems like it's a little more of a known quantity. I had him ranked 27th, so really him going at 25th is right in line with where I saw his value. As a player, he's kind of got that new mold swing where the hands start a little lower. The swing path is very leverage focused and almost looks like he's swinging a golf iron as opposed to a you know, bat where the follow through is not exactly all the way around the head, but gets a tremendous amount of power and taps into all his power into games. So he's a guy that's probably going to move really fast through the early part of the minors, bringing both a good batting eye and his power. Gasparino had noted that they liked him on defense. I think he's probably got a little bit of work to do. I saw some stiffness when I watched some of the defensive stuff, albeit it was pretty limited in what I was able to see and find on that. And that 6'4", 200-pound profile is somewhat atypical at third base, but he's certainly going to go out at that position and has a solid chance to stick there. The Dodgers do like their versatility, so it wouldn't shock me to see him play some first and maybe some left field as he gets through the upper minors, but definitely a polished college bat that brings a lot of game power from the right side, which is something that's going to be of value in the coming years.
I was looking at the sort of the rest of the draft. I know as of now, Bush isn't signed, and then their second round pick, Jimmy Lewis, isn't signed. He's a high school pitcher, so there's a little bit of risk there, obviously, of him, you know, going to college. Mm-hmm. Go ahead.
Bush will likely sign here pretty soon. His team went a little deeper into the college tournament, so those guys tend to kind of fall in line after about a week or two of their teams being eliminated. So I wouldn't foresee much issue there. But just to touch on Bush real quick before getting into Lewis, he's a guy that I actually liked more before the start of the college year than just as a guy that had a really solid hit and power tool. I really thought that at North Carolina he would turn the corner this year. Still really good production. Maybe my expectations were a little too high there. But another guy that's probably more raw power than game power, but does get to a lot of his game power. Real strong hands. Pretty good overall athlete, despite being kind of a square 6 foot. I think 6 foot 210 is what he's listed at. And I know they announced him as a second baseman. If you watch some of the infield work he did in the Cape playoff, Cape All-Star game, there's a lot of work to be done there. So, but then again, you know, you look at the pros and see guys like Max Muncy and Travis Shaw playing second base on playoff level teams, and really the paradigm of second baseman is kind of shifting. So,
literally,
it'll be interesting. right. So, you know, just based on body and athleticism, it looks more like a third base or left field profile to me, or in staying at first base ultimately. But they're drafting the bat there, and it's a really polished college bat. Another guy that's not going to spend a lot of time in the low minors. He's going to get to the upper levels pretty quickly.
Mm-hmm.
On Jimmy Lewis, that one I assume would probably take some time. Just they're going to have to find money, I would assume, and other picks. And as we're starting to see some of those signing bonuses get announced on Twitter, you can expect to see some of that savings you're seeing with some of those guys go to Jimmy Lewis, who is a prep pitcher out of Texas that's got a commitment to Louisiana State. Another 6'6", rail thin Texas flamethrower. It's not an unfamiliar profile we've seen from the Gasparino era. And the last one they did like that in Dustin May has turned out pretty well so far. So going back to the well a little bit with Jimmy Lewis, and I actually have him ranked higher than I had Dustin May coming out of high school. Wow. But then Dustin May impressed us all with the polish that he showed right out the gate as a pro. So he kind of jumped pretty quickly in the rankings. So it's kind of tough to say who I would like better at this point, given what, you know, there was a bit of a blind spot as far as what Dustin May's true value was before the draft. So we'll see kind of where Lewis ends up, but another guy with good athleticism and obvious projectable build, and he's got three pitches and a good feel for spin on his curveball. So somebody that I guess what you'd call is a good mold of clay for the development team.
One of those bonuses that just happened, I think, in the last few days, Logan Boyer, who is their 11th rounder, anything after 10 rounds, any bonus over 125, under 25,000 counts against the pool. So I think he signed for 300,000. So, you know, that takes a little bit away, but they still do have a pretty good amount of surplus there still. But like out with him, and then I was going to say, are there any other standouts you saw maybe past the 10th round that like that could be somewhat of value to you?
Yeah, well, Boyer's probably the big one, and typically anybody in that 11th round is where you're going to see that pick made, where they're going to stretch a bit. And he was a guy that didn't throw a lot at San Diego State, so it's hard to say what he is, but reports on his velocity are good. You watch his film, and he throws a natural cut on the fastball, and he's got a bit of a spike breaking ball. Profile kind of reminds me of Will Harris with Houston Astros, a reliever that kind of relies heavily on that cutter, spike breaking ball mix, that pretty similar paths until the last third of the plate, where it becomes pretty tough to pick up on the break of the ball. Whether or not he becomes a reliever like Will Smith or Will Harris remains to be seen, but given that he's had a limited college track record, it's really hard to say what his future holds on the mound. In similar vein, their 18th round selection, Jeff Belge, he came out of the Northeast as a prep, pretty well regarded. In fact, there was even some talk of him eventually being a high round guy, kind of in that Sean Newcomb mold with the Braves. Real tall left-hander, actually has decent athleticism and looked like he could control his mechanics pretty well as a high schooler. Never quite got it put together at St. John's. And in fact, some of the scouting reports you read will even tell you that his velocity dipped this year. But, you know, if you're a believer that if you've shown it before, then you have it somewhere. He's kind of a good project for the development team again, as a guy they may try to get back to his old ways as a prep star.
Okay, go ahead.
No, go ahead. That was it.
Oh, I'm sorry. Just, you know, I guess the common question of any kind of any time a draft happens is, you know, it's probably the top two or the top one or two picks, but are there any of these Dodgers draft picks that you foresee, like, are they like almost automatically into your top 10 prospects, or do you kind of have to see them first before you sort of rank them?
Well, I like to say that the rankings on the draft board kind of reflect where the player would go into the system without ever, you know, facing a pro pitch or throwing their first pro pitch. It doesn't always work that way. Oftentimes after the draft, I get more information or more video and can make an even better call on a player now that I can drill down specifically on that player. But in this case, just grades alone, Cody Hosey's going to move into the top 10. I had him as a 55 tier player. If he hits his way through the low, you know, the short season and even into low A, as I expect him to, probably could creep up into the 60 tier before the end of the year. And that puts him in range of being in the top five before the year ends. So that's pretty good value for late in the first round. Michael Bush was the highest rated player I had in the 50 tier, and I really struggled deciding whether I wanted to include him as a 55 grade player versus a 50 grade player. The tiers are where I really put my value in the player as far as that overall grade versus their rankings. So given that I had Michael Bush so close to that 55 grade, it wouldn't surprise me if he comes in and hits as well as expected that he would also move into that 55 tier, which would put him likely somewhere 6 to 10 in the back of the top 10. And then after that, Jimmy Lewis will grade out before throwing a pitch at the back of the top 30. So it's safe to say that probably three of these picks are getting into the top 30 before they ever have to perform at the pro level, which is a good start. So, because, you know, once these other guys get in and either hit or pitch above expectation, we'll see some movement. And I do think there's pretty good depth in the class that they brought in that could fill in some of the gaps in the system that's already pretty deep.
Back in 2012, Paco Rodriguez was drafted by the Dodgers, and he actually made the majors that year. That's super rare. But I know it's on like the you know, the front or the back of everyone's mind, because specifically with this Dodgers bullpen, it's their weak spot, and people are going to want to know, like, are any of their draft picks like, are any of them like someone you could actually see in a major league bullpen this year? I figure the answer is no, but if not, let's expand it to say even like next year.
Yeah, I mean, the answer is probably no. There were guys that, had they gone that route, there are some college relievers like Matt Cronin at Arkansas who really are not going to be moved into the rotation in the minors and are strictly relievers that could have moved quickly. They did take relievers in rounds 4, 6, and 7, college relievers. And in fact, the round 6 reliever, Aaron Oschenbein, is one of the older prospects in this draft. However, as a fun fact, he's a leap year baby, so technically out of birth dates, he's only 5-ish. But he's a guy that could move pretty quickly as a reliever with pretty crazy strikeout numbers and a pretty advanced repertoire of mid-90s fastball, kind of a spike breaking ball and a split finger. But of those relievers, the guy I really liked was the 5th-round pick, Jack Little, who was Stanford's closer. Really looks, though, like he could be a starter at the next level. And it's said all the time about converting college relievers to starting, and rarely that works out well. But Jack Little did throw a lot of innings as a reliever and was kind of used in that old Houston Street-style 3-inning save-type performances for Stanford. So he's a guy that could move really fast if they left him in relief, but I think he's going to stay in the bullpen. So really, of guys that would have a shot in the next 2 years, you're probably looking at those top two hitters in Cody Hosey and Michael Bush if they can carry their tools up to the mid-minors and be knocking on that door.
I looked up Oschenbein, and he was born in 96, so 2020 to 2023 are going to be his age 6 season. So he's going to shatter all the records, I think. David, thank you very much for the draft. Before we let you go, I do have one question, and it's more prospect related than draft. We talked about this last week. I thought it was a good question. I wanted your opinion on it. Will Smith and K-Bear Ruiz are, you know, two of the Dodgers' best prospects. They're both catchers. We saw this with Deonna Navarro and Russell Martin 13 years ago, where they basically had to trade one of them because they didn't want two, like, sort of number ones competing at the position. Do you foresee a situation, and it's not, maybe not this year, maybe not even next year, it might be late next year, but can they coexist on the same team as catchers or in some capacity? Do you foresee that being a problem, or is this going to be something the Dodgers have to sort of deal with before it gets to that?
Well, I certainly think they could, especially with the way the Dodgers use versatility. And if you've read my stuff, you know I'm a big believer in Will Smith. I actually ranked Will Smith ahead of Keibert Ruiz, so I was really excited to see him play at his level in AAA this year, as opposed to last year, where he really struggled at the end of the year and probably cost himself a chance for a September call-up and maybe even some postseason action the way he was playing at Double A. But Smith's a guy that is an excellent catcher that can also fill in some at third, probably second a little bit. So if you had both of them at the major league level, I don't think necessarily one's standing in the way of the other getting ample at-bats. The only issue I see is I don't know if Keibert Ruiz ends up making the majors with the Dodgers, being as that he's probably their top trade chip at the moment.
Mm-hmm.
And if they're going to make any big move to acquire talent at the deadline, you got to believe his name is going to be the name that a lot of teams are going to ask for. And is a guy that they probably can afford to part with if you're going to part with one of your top-level guys, considering how well Will Smith's playing and the depth of the catcher position in the system. Great. So, I mean, if you look at the performances so far, you can even talk about like a Hunter Fiducia that's been hitting really well with Great Lakes, kind of working his way up that catcher depth chart. So you've even got more potential prospects filling in that gap if you deal Ruiz. And I haven't had the chance to get out to Tulsa or to the Drillers as much as I would have liked to yet this year. And that's probably going to be my project the rest of the summer, is kind of fill in some of the gaps on the guys that I haven't seen yet. And kind of looking at where some of the guys that were there last year have gone. But if you just look at the numbers, some of the things that frustrated me with Ruiz doesn't seem to have corrected itself quite yet at the Double-A level. And that's, given his age, not really a red flag yet, but it is something that I see that's just a little bit concerning. Still a guy that makes a lot of contact, but doesn't always make that contact count. You know, where you might be able to trade some strikeouts for power. He was a guy last year that too often would go with what the pitcher's game plan was and go after pitches that were less likely to be driven with any kind of authority. And just based on still low K rates, walk rate is improving, but really not seeing any changes in ground ball rate, fly ball rate, things that might, or even pulled balls that would show you that there's been a dedication to a shift more to in line with what the Dodgers are doing with the rest of their hitters.
Great. And just as a note, Will Smith homered again tonight. So he has 5 straight games with a home run for Oklahoma City. He's handled his demotion to the minors quite well, it seems. It's looking good. Thanks so much, David. Really appreciate your insight on both those catchers and also the draft. Really happy to have you on. Thanks so much for taking the time out of your day, and hope to have you on again soon.
All right, yeah, thanks for having me, and be on the lookout around the All-Star break for my updated prospect rankings that I'll do for mid-season. There should be some pretty good movement this year based on what we've seen in the first half of the year.
Looking forward to it. Thanks again, David.
All right, thank you.
And we'll talk about the major leagues a little bit after this ad break.
Hey, it's Kaylee Cuoco for Priceline. Ready to go to your happy place for a happy price? Well, why didn't you say so? Just download the Priceline app right now and save up to 60% on hotels. So whether it's Cousin Kevin's Kazoo Concert in Kansas City, go Kevin! Or Becky's Bachelorette Bash in Bermuda, you never have to miss a trip ever again. So download the Priceline app today. Your savings are waiting.
Go to your happy place for a happy price. Go to your happy price, Priceline.
And welcome back. That was great.
I love it. It's always fun having David on. He
knows so much.
he goes out to games. He goes out to minor league games. He watches a ton of video.
And his comps are always like, it's never these lazy comps. It's like, ah, yes, this 4-string starter. I'm like, oh yeah, that guy. that is a good profile.
And he doesn't like, he really tailors it. I know he used to write about Rocky stuff for a while. He really knows like the team. Like he's familiar with like the sort of drafting philosophy, or at least what they've shown with their picks. And like he sort of tailors his not rankings, but like where when he tries to do mock drafts or things like that, he's thinking along with them. So like it gives a solid sort of real, like a realistic insight to it, I guess, is the best way to put it.
Oh, you and I were talking about how long we've been doing this podcast. So we should talk about someone that you and I have talked about with David from a prospect perspective. Cody Bellinger, you have an update for me?
I do. He actually got back into the home run game last week. Hit three of them. And he is his pace right now is up to 52 homers and 131 RBIs and 18 steals. So he's not quite the 50-20 club, but close enough to where it's like doable. But I was looking up. So he's on pace for 131 RBIs, but like even getting to 120 would be sort of relatively like noteworthy, at least since the Dodgers moved to LA. How many players would you guess have driven in 120 runs since the Dodgers moved to Los Angeles?
As a Dodger, right?
Yes, as a Dodger. Yeah. Oh, man, that'd be... Everyone in the majors, yeah.
120 RBIs for the Dodgers as an LA Dodger. Let's say six.
You are very close. Okay. It is five.
Okay.
So Tommy Davis was the first. He has the record. 62 was like the weirdest year. It was the first year at Dodger Stadium. And it was also an expansion year. And he drove in 153 runs. Like that's still the Dodgers' scoring record, at least for a team since moving to LA. Then Piazza, they went all the way till Piazza at 97, 124 RBIs. Sean Green, 125 in 01. Adrian Beltre in his 04 swan song with 121. And then Matt Kemp in his near triple crown, near 40-40 season. 2011 drove in 126. Since then, Adrian Gonzalez led the majors in RBIs. Oh man, I don't have it in front of me. I think it was 2016 with 116. No, I guess 2015. But yeah, so that's they don't get to 120 very often in LA. So we'll see if he can get there.
On the sadder news, the other another prospect, former prospect right. that you and I have talked about, Corey Seager, the story of the Dodgers offense on quite a few players are going through either slumps or mini slumps, but Corey Seager was anchoring that offense, and then he pulled a hamstring. Tore? It was a one or a two tear of the hamstring?
Yeah, so I guess initially... Dave Roberts, like the night of, and that's always like a guess at that point because they don't really know much. But he was like, "Yeah,
it sounded like a guess."
He's like, "Yeah, it's a grade two." But so, and that's usually like a 4 to 6 week thing. That they did the MRI and they said it's somewhere between a grade one and grade two. Mm-hmm. But he's like out basically till at least after the All-Star break. So at that point, like we talked about the schedule last week, and it was, you know, like how they had what 26 games left. So he did it in the second game of that stretch. So he'd miss, it'd be like a 4 week miss if he doesn't play till after the All-Star break and like at least 24 games miss. So that seems right to me. And it might be even be a week or two longer than that. Who knows, but that's roughly where they're at right now.
I'm going to the Fenway series, which is the first series after the All-Star break. And I'm really hoping it's exactly right. I'd love to see him.
That would be something. Plus, they could be like, well, he could play DH since, you know, like to ease him back in. There was some precedent here. In 2013, his first full minor league season, he missed 3.5 weeks with the same left hamstring tear. So not sure what the exact severity was, but that's, you know, roughly similar. So basically in the interim, like Chris Taylor is going to be the sort of primary shortstop going forward. You know, Kiki is basically at second and fills in elsewhere at times, but it's basically going to be Chris Taylor at short, and that's he's been bad this year, like at the plate. Like I was looking up entering Monday, he was at 223, 294, 391. His OPS plus is 79. His WRC plus is 80. I looked at Baseball Prospectus because they have that like DRC plus this year, which is a tad different than the others, but it's roughly similar. He's at 78 on there, so he's basically been bad all the way around. I wanted to see where he was at with like his batted ball stuff, and it got even more depressing. if you look on his Statcast numbers, based on his batted ball data and like exit velocity, things like that, his expected batting average is 197. His expected slugging is 311. His expected WOBA is 257. His actual WOBA is 294. So he's been like expected to be even worse than he has been. Like if you look at like player pages, if they're like near the top of the leaderboard, their numbers are, they get like, they're surrounded by like a red glow, you know, or, and it's like, it's pink and then it gets like fiery red or like hotter red as you get, like Cody Bellinger is basically a bunch of red on his page. And then like Chris Taylor is like a lot of blue. It's like the opposite end. And I was like, wait, I wonder what the thing for that is. And so I scrolled over each of these, the expected batting average, bottom 3% of the league, expected slugging percentage, bottom 5%, expected WOBA, bottom 1%. And then his average exit velocity is the bottom 4% of the league, 84.3 miles an hour. So he's just not hitting at all. Like, and so they have to kind of, you know, hopefully he at least turns it around to closer to what he was last year, which was a downgrade from 2017, but still like a productive major leaguer. So they have to get something out of him because they,
and the other option is Kike Hernandez, who is also struggling.
Right, basically roughly hitting the same as Taylor on the season, although better, a little bit better batted ball data. But like, man, that's it was one of those things where I really didn't know going in. I haven't been paying that much attention to the batted ball stuff. But I was thinking, hey, let's just see what this shows. And I was like, oh no, like what is this? Like this is bad. So yeah, it's rough.
Well, we're gonna head in the questions, do a kind of a quicker weekend in review since we talked to David for a while. Just real quick, your thoughts on the week? It was a weird week, right? 3-3, but the series in the Cub was kind of encouraging, a lot of different kinds of wins, playing against one of the other better teams in the NL. But then this just stinker of a series in Anaheim.
Yeah, so it was like weird, like you're right, 3-3 where it could be more impressive because they won 3 out of 4 against the team they might play in the playoffs in the Cubs. But then also, 2 of the 3 losses were like blown leads by the bullpen late, like one by Kenley, one by Joe Kelly, who had like the,
ooh,
the
I Joe Kelly game of the all. I had blocked that appearance out of my brain. Thank you. I was like, yeah, oh, was, what was the other bullpen loss? I forgot.
It was the first day of the week, like last week. So like we recorded that day, and then that night was like that crazy game. And well, plus they had already given up these, so they had a 2-run lead. Dylan Floro gave up a 2-run shot to Mike Trout. You know, it's Mike Trout. What are you going to do, right? And then, so it's a tie game. And Joe Kelly, who hadn't pitched in any kind of leverage at all for like 5 weeks.
We talked about him on Monday, the day of the game. Right. And we were like, this is kind of hopeful. Maybe some good stuff's happening.
Yeah. And like, but you know, that it's been in like low leverage, that kind of a thing. And then he immediately goes into high leverage and he didn't even give up a hit. Like he still gave up 2 runs because he couldn't find the plate. Like, the one of the run scoring plays was a 60 footer like fielder's choice that produced a safe result at the plate. He had 3 walks. One was intentional. 2 wild pitches that counted. Another one that didn't. That bounced so hard off the backstop that no one was able to advance. So like it didn't count as a wild pitch. Like it was like watching it, you're like, this is art. This is crazy. But yeah, so it was a weird week for sure. Like you know, there's no real like deeper meaning, I don't think, to it, but it was just, it's one of those where you could take it either way. Like impressive that they were managed to win 3 or 4 from the Cubs, but also, man, how did they get swept by the Angels? And man, the bullpen's still bad. But then the bullpen didn't give up runs in the other 4 games. So it's like, you know, 6 of the other, that kind of thing. Who knows?
Well, let's get jiggy with it with questions. You ready?
Quick note just before questions. I forgot to mention this when we were talking to David. The signing deadline for draft picks this year is July 12th, so they have roughly a month. Then anytime after that, then you know, you just can't sign them. So the other thing is when David mentioned Hunter Verducha, you don't know how hard I tried.
I was holding in to send him out.
The Dodgers like having their fiduciary responsibility to bring him up, but that kind of, I'm like itching here, like, oh, no, I can't do it. And then but I had to get that out. But
David is such a professional. He called right, you
exactly.
In.
So quick before we get to questions, Edwin Jackson, old friend alert. He pitched tonight for Toronto. They used an opener, so he actually pitched in the second inning. Mm-hmm. And boy, did he not pitch well. He did not get out of the second inning. He faced 10 batters, 8 of them reached, 7 of them scored.
Oh, no.
Three of them hit home runs. Justin Upton, first game of the year, first pitch home run. Shohei Ohtani hit one that was like, I saw a GIF of the swing, and it looked amazing. Like, he somehow, like, just like sort of poked it to left and it like shot out like a cannon, like the other way. So I looked this up. Edwin Jackson, now in the season, 12.43 ERA, worst in the majors. His 9.66 FIP is the worst. His 6.40 xFIP is actually only the seventh worst. So this is out of 364 pitchers with at least 20 innings. He's at 25 and a third innings, 41 runs, 46 hits, 12 home runs. Opposing batters against him right now, 390, 455 on base, 822 slug. he's almost at like Barry Bonds level. It's bad. It's really bad.
You ready for this question? Sorry.
Absolutely.
If the Dodgers sign Will Smith the closer, we could have Will Smith catching Will Smith. What other teams had players with the same names on the roster at the same time, even if it's not as great as a pitcher and catcher duo? What do they do with the uniforms?
So I was trying to find a good shot of like the jerseys of this, but this is from Sissy, by the way. The most famous one that I can think of is Bobby Jones with the 2000 Mets. They had two pitchers named Bobby Jones. Bobby J. Jones was a right-handed white pitcher. Bobby M. Jones was a left-handed black pitcher. The latter only pitched 1 year for the Mets, or actually 2 years, 2000 and 2002. But 2000 was the year they were on the Mets together. And to my knowledge, I think they just – I thought for sure they had like something where it was like – they denoted it, but it was just Jones and then their different uniform number that I could see. I this might be wrong, but then I looked up like the when Ken Griffey Jr. and Ken Griffey Sr. were teammates on the Mariners, they just wore Griffey with their numbers on it. They didn't say Sr. and Jr. So like it's pretty rare. But I think it's like case by case. But then again, sometimes you see where players share the same name, last name, but not, maybe not the same for the full name. And they've used initials. Players have used initials before. So I think it's case by case, but it's very rare. And believe me, I'm rooting for it. I think we need to have a Will Smith battery at some point this year. So I am rooting wholeheartedly for the Dodgers to trade for Will Smith and not have to give up Will Smith and say trade. I mean, they wouldn't, I don't think, in that kind of a trade. But I think that would be interesting for sure.
So I'm just looking this up now because I was curious, because normally not a thing I care to look up. Do you know the middle names of the two Will Smiths?
Oh, you know what? The Dodger one, it's like I know what it is, but I can't remember it.
Dills.
I knew it was strange. Something like I knew it was something unique, but like I just couldn't remember it.
Pitching Will Smith is Michael Smith.
And just to note, another thing Sissy asked last week, maybe the week before, she asked about the Joe Kelly bobblehead and like what if any starting pitchers had pitched on their bobblehead day. You know, we don't really know of a database necessarily of that, but this we're recording this on Monday. Tomorrow on Tuesday, Clayton Kershaw is scheduled to pitch on his bobblehead day. It's an anniversary of his no hitter. So there's one at least for Sissy. So, hey, all right.
A real quick question. Do you think the Dodgers are obligated to call up Will Smith before they go to Miami in August?
Oh man.
Is it in the
bargaining? I'm going to look up in the rule book. It's probably in there. Yeah.
Okay. So questions from Craig. You ready? We've got five.
Yep.
I was trying to think of a comparison to the Anthony Davis trade in baseball and really can't come up with any. Of course, there's the Herschel Walker trade, which is kind of comparable because of the draft picks. Do you think if MLB allowed trading draft picks, you could get big trades like the Davis deal, or is it just hard to do because baseball is harder to project success? I do wonder what the value of a draft pick would be. Like, I feel like a top 10 pick is similar to basketball, right? Where, like, very, very valuable, but as you get down, they just... they're. It's almost like the later picks would be more valuable than a basketball late pick, but... Like those middle picks just don't have the, and even an early pick probably just don't have the same sort of leverage that they do in basketball.
Yeah, and it's like, I think trading picks would be awesome in baseball.
Yeah, me too.
But like at the same time, basketball is so weird. It's so different because
so star driven.
12 man roster. Yeah, and it's a star driven league. So there's like a handful of players that are like absolutely. Do whatever it takes to like get them and you're fine, you know, like relatively, like, whereas baseball is much more team oriented. Football is obviously very like team oriented. So it's much harder to sort of have one player make so much of a difference. I mean, maybe a quarterback or something, but quarterbacks like rarely get traded. It seems these, I don't know, but like, so yeah, I think it would be something like, let's say, the year Strasburg was the number one pick, where he was like so far and away, like one of the bigger like college prospects we've ever seen, or one of the bigger draft prospects we've ever seen. That would have been interesting had the Nationals been able to trade that pick, you know, what they could have gotten for him. That would have been something to see. So I think it's more like almost like that would almost flip it, where that number one pick would be the big asset in terms of like, some teams sort of going for it. It wouldn't be like the Nationals are going for it by trading for Randy Johnson or something, and then get, not that he was active then, but just like, but then also give away that number one pick. I think it might be like that was almost that pick was the star of that, it would have been the star of a deal, but who knows? Maybe I don't know. But like,
I would love, like, who, what team, what position does your team need to be where you're going after an asset that doesn't, you know, come into value for, you know, Strasburg was very quick, but even still a year or two.
Yeah, right. Like, exactly. Like,
and he, so many he was trades super are quick. Demanded by win now mentality.
Right. And so that's what makes it difficult, but like, man, it would be really interesting to see it, but yeah, it's hard to come up with like an MLB equivalent. If you look at like what, I guess speaking of Randy Johnson, I wonder if his trade from Seattle to Houston ended up being good. Cause if I remember right, I'm looking this up as I'm talking, but I know they got Freddie Garcia in that deal, and like they sort of had, they helped like add some building blocks for the team that would win 116 games a few years later. Freddie Garcia, Carlos Guillen, and John Halama ended up going to the Mariners in that deal. Whereas, like, and look, like, Randy Johnson was awesome, like, that year with Houston, and then, like, ended up winning four Cy Youngs, you know, on his four-year free agent deal. So it's not like he was bad. But, like, the Mariners, like, I'm looking at their 2001 team. Carlos Guillen, he actually was kind of bad. 87 OPS plus, but he was the starting shortstop. But then you look at the pitching staff, Freddie Garcia, 18-6 with a 3.05 ERA. John Halama, he had a 4.73. So yeah, it wasn't that good. But that was like the one that came to mind. Like, the
one that came to mind for me, and again, it's hard to compare, was Cliff Lee, Brandon Phillips, Grady Sizemore, and Lee Stevens,
Bartolo
Colon, and Tim Drew. That's just like, that is a lot of value and sort of more prospecting.
That was, right. That was one of the more like heavier, like, prospect deals you'll ever see.
Let's see what you did there.
I didn't even think about that actually.
Bartolo has got a lot of weight.
I know.
See what you did there.
The Mark Teixeira trade too. The first one. Braves Rangers. That was pretty nuts. It's sort of, they got like Neftali Feliz, and it set up like
it helped set up the Rangers like two World Series runs, but like even that, it's really you don't. I think teams are so hyper aware. Like everybody's so hyper aware of prospects now that like those trades are harder and harder to come by. Yeah.
Next question. I'm going to talk to you off the air about the Lakers trade. I'm not happy about it. What a competent franchise just keeps pulling it off. Cody Bellinger hit his 28th home run off a left-handed pitcher in his career on Sunday. That puts him second on the LA Dodger list. Can Eric name the top left-handed Dodger home run hitter against same side pitchers?
Okay, so, man, my first thought was actually Sean Green, but I don't think he was here long enough. Man, Heath here didn't really hit him enough, but maybe he, no. You know what? I'm just gonna stick with Green. I don't really know.
That is correct.
Nice.
You got it right. I'm proud of you.
He was short and sweet.
41 with his time in LA.
Damn.
The St. Louis Blues won the Stanley Cup, ending their run as the oldest franchise that had never won one. My question is, who among the four oldest expansion teams will finally break their 50 years without a title? So you've got the Rangers, the Padres, the Brewers, the Nationals. And the Nationals and the Mariners are the two teams that have never appeared in a World Series.
I mean, the Nationals are like disappointing again this year, and they're probably not going to make the playoffs. But it seems like they are the most like they're closest or like readily built. That said, it's really hard to say anything but the Padres, just because the sheer amount of talent they have, and they have to. There's a lot of steps between having the up and coming talent and actually starting to win. They're starting to this. They're not quite there yet. But, like, I think within a few years they'll be really good. So I would probably pick them over the Nationals. And, obviously, the Nationals are counting the Expos years. I think if I had to pick one, I think I'd pick the Padres.
It's interesting because you have to kind of go both on how the teams currently look and also just the franchise's willingness to spend and expand, which is where – normally you would discount the Padres, but they've been showing the willingness to do that. So I'm going to say the Brewers. I think they have enough of a sort of chutzpah to maybe pull it off. Like they'll have to get a little lucky probably to beat some of the AL teams. But, you know, they were one win away from beating us and going into the World Series. And then who knows? They've got a puncher shot for sure.
I don't know what made in my head me not hear the Brewers, but you're absolutely right there. They are clearly set up better than any other team at the moment. Like they could win this year. Like,
but I also, and they're not set up well now, but in terms of just how the franchise has been run in the past and I expect to run in the future, the Rangers, you know, I wouldn't surprise me at least if sort of none of these teams really do it in the next 5 or 6 years, but then come down the line when some of the hopeful prospects for the Rangers hit their peaks and then maybe they make a big signing or two. So we'll see.
Yeah.
Yep.
Although records for the first half are based on how many games are scheduled before the All-Star break, it is still something. So Gary Sheffield hit the most home runs by an LA Dodger with 27 in the first half. Can Bellinger top that in the next 3 weeks?
Yes. I mean, yeah, it's 3 weeks and he's what, four shy. So yeah, I mean, like, he just hit three last week. I know he had a slump where he didn't really hit one for a while, but, like, if he just hits one a week, he's one shy. And so
We've got a trip to Coors in there.
Yeah, they play a lot at home. He hits a lot of home runs at home. So, yeah, I think he will get to that number.
Did you see the San Diego-Colorado series at Coors?
I wrote about it yesterday. Like, it was like... the Friday night game was it should have been the signature game, but it ended up not being. It caught me by surprise because it was 11-4 Rockies in the eighth, and then the Padres scored one, and then they scored six in the ninth, and then five in the 12th. And they won. And then on Sunday, the game was like, it was like 9-8 in the third. And I was like, what is going on? And I started looking up. I'm like, man, they have scored like every run this series. And I started looking up and like that there's this famous like Dodgers Rockies series from 96 They scored 85 runs in that series. And at that point yesterday, like in the third inning, they were at like 82 runs. They ended up getting to 92 because that game was 14-13. But like they set a major league record for runs in a 4-game series. But back to that Dodgers Rockies like 4-game series, that game ended with a 16-15 Rockies walk off. It was probably the most Coors Field game of Coors Field history. Eric Young stole 6 bases in that game to tie a major league record. Like, it's one of the great like games. It was just it's so insane. It's so crazy. But yeah, pretty classic Coors.
And ending as we often do on a food question, is there any food item that you absolutely have to have hot sauce, whether that be Tabasco, Frank's Red Hot, Sriracha, whatever, on? And for him, it's pho. Is something he always puts Sriracha on. What about you, Eric?
Craig, this is a family podcast. We're not working blue this week. So for me, it's eggs.
Sure.
My usual go-to, especially if I'm at home, is Pico Pica, just for eggs. But like I'll use kind of whatever. But there's also this little bottle of stuff. I believe it's El Yucatan. They have various degrees. I just use the habanero one. It's like a bright green. It's probably unnaturally bright green, but it's scary, and it's a little hot for my taste. But it's just like on the periphery for me. They actually have a hotter one that I've tried, and I took like 1 or 2 bites. But like, why would I ever do this on purpose? Like it was too hot. At the same time. Obviously like nachos or something, like you have to do that, but just in terms of like a regular meal, I almost always throw some hot sauce of some sort on eggs.
I am a very frequent hot sauce user, kind of on everything. I usually have a Buffalo-y sauce in my house, a Louisiana style, very vinegar heavy sauce.
Oh, nice.
And then I'll sometimes have like a particularly really, really hot sauce, or maybe I'll have some Cholula. Around the house
for sure,
but usually Louisiana is what I go to. And my normal breakfast order is biscuits and gravy and hash browns, and I'll just put hot sauce on all of it, and it's great.
Wait, even on the biscuits and gravy?
Even on the biscuits and gravy.
Wow.
It's one of the things where it started off where it would accidentally get on it when I was hitting the hash browns.
Sure.
And then I just noticed it just added a little heat to it. I loved it.
Oh, that's good. I went out to breakfast with family on Sunday, and that's like about the only time I ever have hash browns, but it's a little like hole in the wall diner. And same thing. I use that El Yucatan sauce on everything. The eggs, the sausage, and the hash browns. And it was excellent.
I'm hungry. Let's go get breakfast.
So this week, I did throw together a Dodgers Rewind because we were talking about the draft with David Hood. I looked up the top position player WAR by a player drafted by the Dodgers, and this is WAR with the Dodgers. So, someone you might think like Mike Piazza, not the top spot. He is pretty high on the list, but not the top because a lot of his WAR came after he was traded. But Ron Say tops the list, so he's the guy this week for Dodgers Rewind. 44.7 WAR. This is the Baseball Reference version. He played 12 seasons with the Dodgers. It was really 10 full seasons. He had 2 cups of coffee in there, 6 All-Star teams, 125 OPS plus. He was the Dodgers, LA Dodgers all-time home run leader, 228 when he retired. He was passed by Eric Karros later. If you look at the top position player WAR from drafted Dodgers, Say is one. And then the next two are also guys they drafted in 1968 to give you an idea of how good that draft was. Also, the draft, we talked about this too, the draft was weird back then. Steve Garvey is number 2, 36.7. They got him in the first round of the June secondary phase draft. I forget exactly what that was, but it wasn't the exact like normal June draft. It was a slightly different. They got Davey Lopes in the January secondary phase draft that year. So they're just big drafting players all year round back then. It was Wild Wild West. But he totaled 32.2 WAR. Piazza is right behind him, so he's fourth. But yeah, so that's your list. All 1968 guys. Hell of a draft for the Dodgers. But that's kind of it for us this week. Thanks for listening. I know we're on a new network now. We're on the SB Nation podcast network. Thank you for sort of making the transition with us. We're happy that you're listening, and we will talk to you next week.